Hey friends, welcome to Clickbait and Cauldrons, an actual play D&D podcast. We are doing something a little different this week by having a short talkback about the Dragon of Icespire Peak. But before we get into that, I do have a couple of announcements. We have a few things currently that are recording and some that are in development, including another season of Module Madness, as well as a homebrew campaign, which is going to be called the Solari Chronicles. We plan on announcing that fully in another episode coming soon, along with revealing what the next module is going to be. Things should be releasing within the next couple of weeks, which is very exciting, but bear with us for a little bit as our release schedule might get a little bit wonky in the coming weeks. For this episode, Britt and I sat down and talked through our thoughts on the first mini campaign. Our discussion contains quite a bit of spoilers for the whole campaign, so if you haven't listened to everything, do that first. This one's a little different. We're talking about our experience with Icespire Peak.
Yeah.
I guess just to start off, I'd love to hear your thoughts as the player, as how you felt throughout Icespire Peak, story-wise, less of like story-wise and combat-wise, and also just like how you felt it went, I guess.
Sure. I mean, like, part of it for me was definitely like adapting to the challenge of playing with two people.
Absolutely.
So some things in terms of gameplay I feel like definitely would have been different if there were more than two people.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as like if we are talking about Icespire Peak as a here's a short module, you know, here's us playing through it to give other people an idea of whether or not they might want to play it. So if we're talking more about the mechanics of the module that we have, I thought it was good. I love the sort of episodic, very sort of like do a quest, finish a quest, you know. It was mm-hmm. It wasn't so linear, I guess, of a structure. It was a lot more sort of like quest driven. And
yeah.
So like you know, that definitely might be helpful for people who my sort of thesis statement, I guess, is that I think that Icespire Peak would be a really great module for people who are starting out. And I think part of that is like if people or if a group, I think, maybe doesn't have like the most confidence in their ability to push a story forward, I guess, then that sort of like episodic, there's a big board, you pick a quest off the board, you do that, and then you beat the dragon. Like it leaves a lot more room for, you know, play and exploration and creative things, and it's not so earth-shatteringly important, I guess, that the players are confident in how to contribute towards structure and moving plot forward and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I think that Icespire, as a whole, from a DM standpoint, is nice for a new DM, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's digestible in terms of preparation. I think that's really important, is that like you can, we didn't do this, so we did it the slow way, and you can tell from the first couple of episodes that I hadn't prepared anything really for most of the places that we were going to go into. And also like I was just getting comfortable using a module and stuff like that, but at the same time it's so much easier to then send the quests that you are going to be working on to your party beforehand through text or through whatever, and being able to prepare quests beforehand instead of just kind of jumping into things, I guess. Whereas,
sure.
Like, you don't have to prepare a whole arc of a story, and there aren't necessarily, I would say, like, plot hooks, really,
mm-hmm.
in this. It's all just quest-based. But on the same end, I think because there's no plot hooks, I had to contribute quite a bit of my own, I'm not going to say skill to it, but like
contribute a lot of my own storytelling elements to it. So, like, I have a degree in film and screenwriting. So, like, I know how to do that, but I would be afraid that, like, somebody who doesn't have that same, like, background in writing and stuff like that would not necessarily be able to string all of the pieces together, I guess, as cohesive as we might have. And even ours isn't that cohesive. It's just cohesive enough to make it feel like a beginning,
middle, and end. Alternatively, that made it a little of a struggle for me too, because I mean, we met in college. I similarly, storytelling is kind of like what I do, and I feel like there was nothing that any of my choices could change unless I like murdered the taskmaster or did something like that, you know, like or up and left Phandalin. I don't think that I felt like many of my choices had agency. Mm-hmm. I guess mm-hmm. It wasn't like, oh, if you do this, then this happens. If you do this, then this happens. It was like, no, you're going to go on these quests. You're going to finish these quests. At the end, you fight the dragon.
Well, to argue with that point, the whole Mandy thing wasn't supposed to happen like that. That's
yeah, but if it hadn't happened like that, it wouldn't matter. You know, we didn't end up having her fight the dragon. We didn't, you know what I mean? Like, the story could have continued absolutely unchanged.
Yeah.
If we hadn't done what we did with Mandy.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Even as a DM, is I felt like I had very little agency. And maybe that was me, in part, wanting to stay true to the text a little bit. I didn't feel like I had much agency until right at the end, really, to make things my own, I guess. Versus,
was there anything in the text that gave you that agency, or was that like a decision that you made to take that agency?
That was a decision I made to take that agency. So in the last one that we recorded, so that was, yes, I mean, we recorded it yesterday, the chase scene mm-hmm. was not in it. That, like,
you made the dragon an adult dragon.
Yeah, I changed the dragon to make it a lot harder. The Gorthok battle was a whole separate quest that I was like, but this is an interesting battle. We should just put this in here as kind of a raising the stakes thing. And I placed it in Phandalin because I thought that's just kind of a cool setting for it versus, like, having to go 3 miles away to this weird place where you finally find this thunder boar or whatever. Because it's like, if there was no stakes of it attacking Phandalin, what's the point in attacking it? You know what I mean?
Sure. Along that point, if you taking like big agency and big changes at the end, what made you take them at the end instead of making those big choices, like, you know what I mean? Like,
right. I think part of that was because I, at the beginning for sure, didn't feel confident enough in my like ability to understand how this how the module works mm-hmm. to be able to deviate from what it originally was. Sure. And I think now, after having had, since we started this in beginning of September, we recorded our first episode at the beginning of September or something, right? Mm. And now having had 3-ish months of DMing every week with our Solari campaign, I feel much more confident in being able to like run with my own ideas more than run with what's given to me. And I think this book to me felt very much, okay, I need to follow it until a point. And I think I took that agency because I wanted to make the story interesting, because it wasn't going to get any more interesting mm-hmm. than you guys find a way to get to Ice Spire Hold. Okay, you go fight dragon. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just nothing like all that fun in doing that. It wouldn't have felt climactic at all, kind of, at the end. But yeah, so I think I want to dive in. That was kind of just our like overview thoughts, right? Mm-hmm. I think I would like to dive in a little more on like your thoughts on like the combat scenarios and some of the quests. I guess let's start with the quests, because we'll go kind of like from biggest to smallest, right?
Sure.
What did you think of the quests that we went on? And even the quests that we didn't go on. I can touch on those a little bit.
Yeah, I definitely can't touch on the quests that we didn't go on. I don't know. I think just sort of for me and my because I'm a little bit more experienced at the game, just a little. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, we definitely played things wrong quite a bit throughout this, but that's fine.
For sure.
It was my fault. It was your fault. Yeah, it was me watching other things and not understanding the rules exactly.
Yeah,
so.
Fully. Accepting homebrew rules from other campaigns as canon.
Right, exactly.
And just rolling with it. No, but I definitely felt like there wasn't a lot of puzzles to be figured out.
Mm-hmm.
Or, again, like, I just didn't particularly feel like my choices had a lot of agency. It was like, oh, you go to the place, you walk through this door, you fight this thing. You know what I mean? Like, it was not open world in any way, I guess, a lot of these quests. But if you know, somebody doesn't feel particularly confident in open world stuff, I think that it could be a very useful tool of sort of getting used to. I mean, I guess the first one was kind of a dungeon, but, like, not many of them were particularly dungeon-y, I guess. But, like, you know, to get used to how to operate a character, how to navigate a space like that, accomplish a goal, whatever. Like, I think it could be an incredibly helpful tool, a very, what's it in video games where the...
Like a tutorial?
Yeah. It's like a tutorial level of a video game.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the whole campaign felt a little bit like that.
Like a tutorial thing of a video game.
Yeah.
And, like, there were so many things that, like, I guess, well, I'll talk about that when we talk about combat.
Yeah. Yeah, I can touch on I'll touch on the quests a little bit, too. It's just that, like, the quests, I agree, felt very much, you go to point A, you get point B, you get item A. Like, it felt very formulaic, kind of, to me, versus being able to do something a little more interesting in that space, right? And I think, to give you credit as a player, you took interesting choices for solving problems and stuff like that. Because, like, the Mandy thing, for example, is that, like, you're supposed to fight the Manticore, and then you talk to the lady, and then you're done with the quest.
Mm.
And we instead took it in a direction of helping this Manticore find their place, and thus we got more combat, and we had a little bit more fun in this situation versus...
I think that was just sort of a moral objection on my part. You know, if Mandy absolutely had turned around and just been evil, then I would have just continued the quest as is.
Right. And I think even in, like, the Nomengard quest, if I'm remembering correctly, is that, like, we kind of, like, instead of the goal in there was to get items and stuff like that, basically. It's just an item fetch quest, right? But you went into it, and we didn't know I did because I read the quest, but overall, the party doesn't know that, oh, there's this mad king who's, like, kind of going, like, paranoid over, like, the safety of his, the safety of his husband. The thing you're supposed to do is kill the mad king.
Right.
And A, that felt wrong. But B, it's like, why? We didn't have to kill it. Like, we didn't kill the king, and it still worked out just fine. So it's credit to you. I'm going to give you credit where credit's due, is that you as the player and took it in directions that were more interesting than what the book presented.
Nice.
Some of the other quests also just felt kind of useless, especially for, like, a spellcasting-focused party.
Sure.
Like, there's one where you get a Dragon Slayer sword or something like that.
And I don't need a sword.
Yeah, literally none of our characters could use it because it's a long sword and none of us were proficient in long swords.
Totally.
Or there's one, like, a lot of them just feel like filler stuff. Like, it was like, oh, you can go here and you'll get this item or whatever, and
just
you're like
for sort of like farming your characters up to a higher level,
right? Exactly. And it's like, this feels
but like you don't even need that because you beefed up the white dragon to heck and we still did fine.
Well, I will say you guys did end at level 7, which is one level higher than you're supposed to end the campaign at, but like I didn't, it felt right to give you guys level 7.
Yeah, it would have been silly that some of the quests ended in a level up and the beating Gorthok thing didn't.
Right, exactly. So yeah, it's very odd, is like, why, like, I think we kind of picked the best quests to do. I mean, the first two didn't really matter which ones you picked, but the second time around, I think, if I'm remembering correctly when we recorded it, that I kind of baited you into doing some, like, doing the Woodland Mansion quest versus doing, I don't know what the other one was you had in mind or whatever, but, like, being like, hey, this one has good things that you can do here versus something else.
I remember it also being, I mean, less of a bait. I was very sort of metagamey, like, okay, we're doing two more, so what is the best order to do them to do what we need to do?
Right, exactly. And I didn't want to draw this. I mean, there's probably 4 more quests or something that we just didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
I think that would have drawn out the story too long. Like,
sure.
What's the point in that? And then you're level 4 for 3, like, for 3 sessions. Or, like, you know what I mean? Like, it felt wrong to draw it out more than it needed to be. So that's what I didn't like about the quests. Well, going off of quests, I mean, still in quests, I guess, but the combat within each of the quests, how did you feel about the combat?
I think that, again, if a character, like, really didn't know what they were doing and they didn't feel confident about how to engage in combat, I think that they are probably good. I'm not a combat expert. I did not always make the most economical choices. I fully just didn't use sorcery points at all on the last 4 battles. Like, I've made tons of choices that, like, sort of nerfed my power, I guess. And, like, I still personally, just as someone who has done some combat and witnessed a lot of D&D combat, like, I found them to be very easy.
Yeah, I agree with you. Because, like,
I think I knew that from the very, very top of the campaign when El just stabbed a man in the leg and murdered him.
Yeah, right at the start. The guy had, I think, 4 HP, 5 HP or something like that.
Yeah.
And you did 6 damage.
I'm pretty sure I did 4 points of damage.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, we could listen back to it or whatever, but, like,
it was, like, 1d4 plus 1 or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I agree. I think the combat was way too easy. And it was just us two. Like,
yeah, it was a 3-person party.
It was a 3-person party with 2 players. One player who, I will say, you picked good characters for combat.
Thank you.
That, like, Merv was, I'm not going to say optimized, because I don't feel like you can ever really optimize a character.
I mean,
but
no,
like,
he also simply wasn't optimized. I didn't use any one of his, like, wild magic sorcerer traits. I just cast some spells.
Right. But, like, Merv was powerful, and, like, so, like, El was, especially in the last battle with the sneak, like, when you finally had sneak attack.
Yeah, I hit sneak attack twice, I think.
And yeah.
I crit on one of them.
You did crazy amounts of damage.
Yeah.
So it was, like, you guys were very effective in battle, and I picked, I mostly picked Holgo because I wanted to play a Wildfire Druid and wanted to see how that felt. And I think with the combination of the 3 of those characters, it made battles way too easy.
Yeah.
But had there been more than 3 people in the party, like, it's recommended from 2 to, like, 7 players or something.
My goodness, I could not imagine 7 players going up against those swords.
No. Well, the swords were, that was all me.
That was all you?
That was all me. Because I was just like, I don't want to make it so easy, right? Like, going into Cryovane. And I was like,
those are pretty easy swords, my friend.
No, I know. But I was like, I got to give some some tension in here. You got to be on your toes, kind of. For example, orcs are a big enemy throughout this entire campaign, and orcs have a really kind of shitty stat block. They're very strong, but they can't do anything else.
Not doing opposed athletics checks with these guys.
Right, they have a low AC and a low HP. So, like, once you hit an orc and you're level 3 or whatever, there's no point in even, like...
Yeah, didn't you suit some orcs as ogres partway through or something like that?
Yeah, there was at one point in the Mandy quest is that... There were ogres in like the courtyard area of that shrine, but then there were also supposed to be orcs inside. There were supposed to be, I think, 8 orcs or something inside, and I just flavored it as I think 6 ogres, because they're, I think, about the same like size, like they're both large characters, or they're both medium characters. Or creatures, I guess, would be a better word for it. So they fit. It's just a better stat block for the things, and it was easy. And I changed Cryovane into a adult white dragon, and added layer actions. And I reskinned a lot of the orcs as acolytes or as ogres, because the orcs, even though they're supposed to be the main enemy, were really weak. Unless I gave you a billion of them.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Like, it's... And then at that point, combat is just drags on forever and ever. Right. You know what I mean? If there's so many actors in combat that, like, it's not fun anymore when you're waiting 3 hours to get to your turn.
Yeah. Although I might appreciate that sometimes. With only the two of us, I didn't have tons of time to always, you know, think...
I agree. And even as a DM, it's hard to be like, oh, well, what am I going to do now? Because a lot of times you get time to react.
Mm-hmm.
You get to react to what other people are doing in combat kind of more, because people are taking their time to figure out what's happening next, kind of. But I think even still, you guys... barely took damage throughout the whole thing, except for when I was actually mean to you guys.
Yeah, it was the boar hitting L with lightning, Cryovane's breath weapon, the lightning bolt from the acolyte. Those are the only times I remember taking real damage.
And when we fell down that trap.
Yeah, we fell down that one trap in the Woodland Mans.
Yeah, literally that was the only times that I like remembered being like, ooh. That's a lot of damage.
I know. And I was so convinced I wouldn't fall for the trap because I've been so focused at that point on my other campaign where I play a barbarian who has danger sense.
Yeah, which would have been totally fine. Which
would have been so helpful, but nope.
Yeah. I don't know. It felt like that trap, for example, was in the book. And so were all of the enemies. But why did that trap deal more damage than all of the,
literally
12 enemies that were in that battle?
Literally the rest of the... enemies combined. That battle also mechanically didn't make any sense to me. The idea that you're supposed to walk room to room battling people, like,
yeah,
there is no way in heck you wouldn't alert
everybody. yeah, are you supposed to walk around the entire mansion and then be like, huh, I guess now I'm gonna fight the Vine Blights by themselves? Like, no, that's boring.
Well, like, yes, also that's boring, but also, like, what happens when I cast Firebolt? Like, there's no way on earth that everyone in the manse doesn't hear Firebolt.
Right, exactly. It's very loud.
So, that seemed mechanically odd to me. I don't think there was a way around fighting everybody at once.
No, I don't think so either. It was, yeah, I don't know. It felt very weird to me. And I get it. Like, you had said earlier that that this felt very much like a tutorial level or a like great for somebody who's new to D&D. Sure. And I completely agree with you, especially in the combat. Because
if you don't know how to use a lot of your special feature skills, you know, if you don't know how to use Bend Luck Well, like, if you know how in theory, but you aren't totally comfortable and prepared to use a bunch of crazy class features, and you forget something like Mindless Rage, or you forget something like Uncanny Dodge or whatever, like,
right,
it's not gonna, you're not gonna die because you forgot about some of your class features.
Yeah. And yeah, I guess it's nice on that end, but I can also just imagine, like, as a new player, like, coming into a combat like that Woodland Manse one, I can only imagine that that would be very frightening. Like, that, like, coming in with a character that's level, I think you guys were level 4 or 5. You might have been 5.
I think 4 or 5.
At that point. But it's like, coming in as a new character, not knowing anything, like, battles must take forever. Because, like, sometimes we would look up things and all that kind of stuff. But, like, with, let's say, 4 people at the table, all new, including a new DM, that is a lot to take in, like, all at once, kind of being like, oh, well, I don't know exactly how this works.
I mean, yeah, I get what you're saying about it, like, feeling overwhelming. And I think that that's why, if that is your situation, I do think that this is a good thing for you, because whether I wish there had just been was there, like, an asterisk on Woodland Manse that was like, don't play this on level one?
Yeah, that one is. So there's, like, 4 or 5 quests that you could do all at the beginning. And you, once you do 3, you then unlock, I think, 4 more quests. And in that that unlocking, it includes the Woodland Manse quest.
Totally. And so, like, I think at that point you have some combat experience. And so I think difficulty rating, it's still fine. There were only 3 of us, and we didn't make good choices, and we were still one hot. Ella was, I think, still full before we fell.
Yeah,
and it was fine.
Yeah, I understand the point of doing a battle like that. It just felt very, for especially as a DM, it felt very like, ooh, there's a lot going on here. And that was kind of the first time I felt that idea of, there's a lot going on here. I have a lot to juggle.
Sure.
And I have experience doing it. There was 12 NPCs or whatever that I was taking care of, kind of. And then, like, that felt like all of a sudden, boom, there's a lot to do now all of a sudden.
I felt more stakes in the Gorthok fight than in the Cryovane fight.
I agree wholeheartedly.
In terms of story stakes, not in terms of difficulty.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the big spooky pig chases you all the way here from Falcon's house and is gonna attack the city and approaches you and blah, blah, blah. And then that one, it's like you go to find a sleeping dragon.
Right, exactly. And you were smart about when we were battling the swords, because I was gonna do Thunder Wave.
Yeah, which I would stop you.
You stopped me, but I let you stop me because that's part of kind of the puzzle of doing that battle of, like, there were other battles that were supposed to happen within the thing, but they were all bad. Like, they were all against a human.
But I also would have been very mad at you if you hadn't let me stop you.
Absolutely.
Because if I was like, if you, the DM,
Wake up the dragon. Yeah, and make the battle harder.
As a PC.
Yeah, no, and it's, I let you stop me because I wanted you to solve that puzzle.
Which puzzle?
How to not wake the sleeping dragon. I mean,
calling that a puzzle is pretty generous.
No, I know, but, like, that's, like, the only, like, puzzle of the Icespire, of the hold. Is that, like,
I mean, the only puzzles, don't make a loud noise.
Literally, don't make a loud noise.
Oh, yeah, again.
There's, like, certain conditions where it's, like, if you ring the bell, it's going to wake up ice. It's going to wake up Cryovane.
That's so dumb. They didn't give any reason why you would do that.
Literally. And then it was, like, if you're in a part of the building that is open to the air and you are fighting, then Cryovane might hear you.
Which, again, doesn't make sense.
No, because nothing was planned in any of those spaces.
Yeah, also, like, walls aren't soundproof, and these are old walls.
Right, exactly. But then it was also like, and something like the thunderclap or thunderwave spell would also wake him up, and he will look for you and see if he can hit you. But like, again, you're safe within the thing. It's not gonna, I don't know. It felt very odd to me that like those were the mechanics to wake up Cryovane. And that was the only problem you had to solve in that area. Yeah, I don't know. It felt very odd. What are your kind of parting thoughts with Ice Spire?
I would say you can't just take any character you want and throw it in this, because it was not a particularly easy module to play a rogue in. Mm-hmm. There weren't always available places to hide. There wasn't any espionage. There wasn't really much lying. There wasn't I think the only deception checks we did were basically on jokes.
Yeah.
You know, like there wasn't a lot of opportunities to use a lot of charisma checks. There wasn't a lot of good sneaking and cleverness and things that I like rogues for. And so playing a rogue was extremely difficult in this anyways. And I felt like sorcerer, someone who can do area of effect shit on these... Sorry, should I curse?
You can, yeah. We've cursed all the time on the actual podcast.
I don't keep track of things. Someone who can do like area of effect stuff and spells like that, the sorcerer was almost OP, you know what I mean? If I was playing a fighter and we were playing without the sort of homebrew cleave rule that people like a lot.
Yeah.
If I was playing a fighter and I could only take out one orc at a time, that could be pretty darn difficult.
Yeah, I agree.
So I would say like it's not the world's most class balanced quest, so I would definitely make sure that if anybody is interested in playing this module, they read through it and guide their players on picking, you know, either picking PCs that are well suited for the world or adapting the world into a way that's well suited for those PCs.
Right. And I'm just going to apologize that I kind of went into this being like, hey, we should play this and let's record it. You know what I mean? I didn't necessarily warn you. I didn't read a whole lot about like what you should do to start the quest kind of thing with you. So I do apologize for having you made a rogue and then it wasn't good.
That's fine. It didn't cause anyone to die. And yeah. I enjoyed flavoring her as an arcane trickster.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it fit the character I built really well. And even if you had said a rogue probably wouldn't be particularly good for this, I probably would have picked it anyways as a character choice.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, for anyone else out there.
Yeah. Well, and that was my fault for not reading the book, kind of, but also like this felt very combat focused when the combat wasn't that good.
I totally agree with that.
Is that like I've played a number of different modules that are so roleplay focused where you're making deception checks and you're making a charisma saving, well, I guess charisma saving throw is a little different, but like you're making a persuasion check or a I already said deception. I guess like intimidation and stuff like that. You're using a lot more charisma based things, whereas like where a bard and a rogue and a paladin.
Oh, yeah, a bard would not. Yeah, depending on what class of bard you use, that could also be pretty tough for this.
Yeah, because like they would be able to buff and stuff like that, mm-hmm. but. Like, we had Holgo, and Holgo is a divine spellcaster. Like, as a druid, is a battler, but also, as a buffer, too. Like, I know I've been in a lot of sessions where I've had to have been kind of the cleric of the group, of being like, oh yeah, I'll cast Mass Heal Word on everybody because everybody took a shit ton of damage. And, like, we didn't really need that in here. So it's like, as playing as a bard, I feel like would be not fun for this. You know what I mean?
Oh, totally.
Because that's all that they really do, except for, like, unless you're, like a swords bard where you're up in fighting people. But at that point, just play like a fighter. I mean, like, I like swords bards. I'm not saying swords bards are bad. I'm playing a swords bard in a campaign that I'm in, but like the it wouldn't be worth it to go through the two levels of not having those extra subclass abilities to get to that kind of.
I'm excited to go back to campaigns where choices matter a little more, right, and where character development also matters a little more. You know what I mean? Because I felt like this one, I kind of had to shoehorn in like facts about the Bloodbanes or whatever. Like, whereas in, you know, in Solari, which is something that people listening to this won't know what it is, but
maybe, soon,
but they will.
A couple weeks after this comes out, it will be kind of first episode of Solari.
I feel like I don't have to strong arm
story into it. Yeah. Well, and just for
or even like opportunities to develop my character, even if it's just like lines where I like opportunities to say lines where I'm like, that adds a little more flavor to who that character
yeah,
is.
Yeah, exactly.
Or as I think ahead to Strahd, which I want to play so bad.
Yeah.
Opportunities for a character to speak and develop themselves even without giving facts.
Right, exactly. And just for context on Solari. Solari is a homebrew game that I've created that Brian, along with four other, five for the first episode.
Five for the first episode.
And then four for the rest of them are playing in. And it's a little more homebrewed, but I think from my end it's more interesting to DM. I don't know about it is for...
Oh, it's...
For player wise.
I enjoy it. It is better in most... I don't want to shit on Wizards of the Coast, but it is better in... It is more along the lines of what I need and my goals for playing the game.
Right, exactly. And I agree. As a DM, I think it's more fun to do it within my own world versus doing it within a world that was created without any, like...
Plus, the players are excellent.
Yes, everybody in it is very fun, too. But yeah, I think... I'm going to ask you one final question.
Ask me a final question.
Would you... Okay, it's going to be two final questions. Actually, I lied.
I'll never trust you again.
First question. Uh-huh. What would you... Would you recommend this... Forget the... I said what. Would you recommend this to different people wanting to maybe play this module? Or... Would you recommend something else before they do this?
I would recommend it. I think there's like a case in which I'd recommend it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think I wouldn't recommend this to brand new players. Part of it being that it is kind of long.
Right.
And I think that brand new players, like the best thing for them is some really grabby one shot or three sesh, like, thing to just get them hooked on the game and let them have a good time. And it doesn't really matter if it has the world's most emotional gravitas or if it's the, I mean, emotions are wonderful and all these, but you know what I mean? Like it's,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't, little one shots or three sessions where, you know, creating a cool, interesting character that arcs from levels 1 to 20 is like not, I think, necessary for a new player. It's more important that they feel something and have fun. So I think like I wouldn't give it to new players. And I think similarly, I don't know if I would. I think like it would be good for every. I think this case in which I would recommend this the most is if everyone gets the idea of Dungeons and Dragons but wants to try something new. Someone who understands DMing already, but isn't an experienced DM or has never DM'd before, could take parts of this and add things in to make it more interesting in a way that they already know from their experience with Dungeons & Dragons will probably work. You know what I mean? And so someone who has the ability to manipulate the structure of it and take out some of those problems. And then I think, you know, as far, I think if you, I'm pretty good at playing barbarians. I get them. I like them. I've played them like 5 times. I get them. If I was playing a barbarian in this, I'd probably get bored. But I've never played a wizard. This is a game in which I would probably play a wizard for the first time. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I think it'd be a good recommendation for people who already sort of get the game, but either aren't crazy experienced or want to try something new.
Yeah.
That's my thesis.
I agree.
Can I turn that same question back around to you? What do you think on that?
Absolutely. I agree. I agree with you. Is that, like, I don't think I would recommend this to the beginning of beginning players, mm-hmm. kind of. I think
if it didn't work out great and you didn't have a sorry, I just asked you a question that interrupted you.
Absolutely fine.
But to that point, like, if you had brand new players and someone who was fairly new to DMing and this didn't go well and they didn't make good adjustments and stuff, I feel like it could fully turn someone off of the game.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. Is that I think you need to have an idea of how to DM this before getting it.
Sure.
So this came as part of the, I believe, Essentials kit. So it's one of the, like, starter packs of D&D. I bought it, the physical book. I think you can buy, like, the digital copy of this on D&D Beyond. But there are... I think you need to have a concept of how Dungeons & Dragons works to jump into this and already kind of have fallen in love with Dungeons & Dragons a little bit before you get to actually playing something like this. Because I jumped into Dungeons & Dragons because I had watched and listened to podcasts where they played Dungeons & Dragons. Mm-hmm. And I understood mostly how the game works. Obviously, there are little tiny rules that I still don't understand and all that kind of stuff. But for the most part...
I don't think there's a human being alive who understands every single rule of Dungeons & Dragons.
No, and if they are,
I don't think Gary Gygax himself understands all the rules of Dungeons & Dragons.
No, I don't think so.
It's all about understanding most of them.
Right.
And also ignoring the ones you don't like. That's one of my favorite things about Dungeons & Dragons.
Exactly.
That's not how other things work.
Exactly.
When I'm driving, I can't just ignore the traffic rules I don't care for.
I wish I could, but... That'd be illegal.
I know. Can is a strong word. I fully can.
Yeah.
But I am not allowed.
Yeah.
I can't be like, I think left turn on red is fine.
Yeah. I'm just going to cross three lanes of traffic.
Yeah. Well, that doesn't stop some folks in Los Angeles.
That is true. But yeah, I think that this overall, you need to have already understand the concept of D&D before jumping into it.
Totally.
Otherwise, I think you could scare off players. I can't speak for other beginner modules that aren't written not by Wizards of the Coast, kind of. So it's hard for me to say, oh, yeah, this is a good thing that you should do for this or instead of this. But just be wary of doing this with a new player, kind of. And don't be afraid to step out of the bounds of the game more than I did. Because I only stepped out of the bounds really towards the end because I wanted to make it interesting. And honestly, if your party or whatever isn't liking what you're like, how the game is being run by the original like source text of the book, kind of ask what your party needs to get better out of it, kind of. I think that's my advice for you if you're going to play this game and people aren't liking it, is to jump into it and understand it, understand what they're not liking about it, and then cater to your players, kind of.
I love when things go off book and it suddenly feels like my choices matter.
Mm-hmm.
Like when I cast slow on those three boar acolyte people,
mm-hmm.
and then they were... It mattered, you know? It mattered.
Well, it changed the whole course of the battle.
It changed the whole course of the battle.
The whole point of that battle was that you guys were kind of always going to be racing and they were going to be in the same pace as you, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
But you having cast command to jump that guy off of the boar and then casting slow changed the whole pace of the battle, basically.
Which I didn't even know he had polymorph. But that's the nice thing about 5e is that you can't cast spells while polymorphed.
Yeah.
So I took out his ability to cast lightning bolt or whatever.
Right, exactly. But yeah, what would you rate this out of 10, I would say? Or 10 or 5. Give me the scale that you're rating it out of.
Make up a scale and then put it on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
But I'm going to say it can't be stars. It has to be some other unit of measurement. And then please explain explain your rating.
What if I don't explain the rating? What if I'm like... I give it an 18. rating it. Let me think.
Can I make the scale for you?
Yes.
Okay. Give it an ability score out of 20.
Give it an ability score out of 20?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is a true plus zero. Because I think that if you roll the dice and you roll well, it'll go well. And if you roll poorly, it'll go poorly. And the rolling the dice is like the players and DM of it, basically.
Yeah.
So I think that this game is very much what you make it.
Yeah, you
so
gave
what's
it.
What's a plus zero? Like a 12?
It's a 10 or 11.
10 or 11?
Yeah. That's not. I'd say that's accurate. Out of 20, it's a 10 or 11.
Yeah.
It's a plus zero. I would agree. I think it's.
Yeah, I think you could roll a nat 20 with this and make it something incredibly cool and wonderful.
Yeah.
And I think you could whiff it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is a 10
and the
or.
The text wouldn't save you.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it is maybe a plus zero, and if you're really taking the reins and not following the book, it could be a plus one.
I mean, I think if you're really taking the reins, you could roll a nat 20.
That's true.
But
yeah.
Yeah. This could be your magnum opus. But
no, I hope not.
Well, you could.
That's true.
I mean,
I hope this isn't my magnum opus.
I love the Adventure Zone, and it started with that dumb,
Lost Minds of Phandelver.
Yeah.
Which is the other Phandelver. Which is the other beginner's book.
Yeah. And it turned into the Adventure Zone, which is amazing.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, this could be truly anything.
Yeah.
Plus zero.
Yeah. It's a plus zero.
I do love that scale.
I think it works great.
Yeah, that was a really great.
I thought about it. I was like, make up your own scale. Then I was like, wait a sec.
Dungeons and Dragons did it for us.
Dungeons and Dragons already made a scale for us, and it kind of works.
Why are we coming up with silly number mechanics when that is literally this whole game?
Because also, it works from a scale of this is really bad to this is really, really good.
Right, yeah. Because if a book is really bad, then that's a minus something.
Yeah, and that's a minus three.
Even if you roll really well, you can't save the fact that the text is stupid.
Right, exactly.
But similarly, if the text is really good, even if you're not a great whatever player
master
or whatever,
still be fun.
It's still not bad.
Right, exactly.
I love that. I love that scale. Actually, that's an amazing rating scale for
media.
For modules at least, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how else to close this out. Thanks for listening.